At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Today, Putnam manages money for more than 9 million individual and institutional investors worldwide. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Boy, it sure sounds impressive, doesn't it? Global coordinated rate cut. 6 central banks got together today and lowered their key interest rates. Another big move in another big crisis. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the American Public Transportation Association, committed to helping Americans save on gas and become energy independent at publictransportation.org. And by Cargill, collaborate, create, succeed. This is how Cargill works with customers. Stores online at cargillcreates.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Today is Wednesday, the 8th of October. Good to have you with us. You know, it's tough to be sure, of course, but it does kind of seem like Ben Bernanke's been listening to our coverage of the credit crisis, because it's tough to come up with a bigger example of the fallout from that whole mess than the world's central bankers getting together and deciding they have got to do something. We'll explain why and why they think it's going to work after all we've been through. It's not just companies whose credit is getting squeezed. We'll look at the state of the states. And how do you say credit crunch in Icelandic? But I digress. Closer to home, the day began on the early side for Mr. Bernanke and the Federal Open Market Committee. Never mind that they were scheduled to meet at the end of the month anyway. At 7 this morning in Washington, they cut the federal funds rate 0.5% to just 1.5%. Marketplace's Steve Henn has more now on how the day unfolded from there.
It was a wild day. Despite the big global interest rate cut this morning, the Dow fell 200 points before lunch. Then at 1 p.m. Eastern, for no apparent reason, it shot back up. Then, right before the bell, it fell off a cliff again. It begs the question, what was going on?
Got me.
David Weiss is chief economist at Standard & Poor's.
I think part of it is the market just doesn't know what to do right now. Everybody is just playing scared.
Here's what the Fed and central banks were trying to do. Get banks lending again by lowering interest rates.
What is necessary is to apply the Powell doctrine, to use overwhelming force to stabilize the situation.
Ted Truman was a staff economist on the Fed's Open Market Committee for 15 years. He says the Fed lowers interest rates we pay by creating money. Think of interest as money's price. If the Fed creates more money, prices fall. Truman says right now the Fed should create a lot.
Flood the economy with liquidity and worry about mopping it up later.
But there's a problem. Banks are hoarding most of this new money.
Basically, people are sitting on the cash. They're not using it.
Weiss says banks are scared to lend money because they're afraid other banks or businesses will default, and they want a big cushion of money in case they can't borrow from anyone else. Truman says today's coordinated rate cut was meant to signal that central bankers around the world will keep creating money until commercial banks are so stuffed with it, they start lending again. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
About the only thing worse than being a corporate chief financial officer today might be having the same job in a state government. They're big players in the short-term credit markets, too, and they are increasingly finding it hard to get the cash they need to keep services up and running. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler considers the causes and the consequences.
States like California normally borrow money to cover expenses until tax revenue comes in later in the year. To raise cash, they sell what are called revenue anticipation notes. They're like bonds and are generally considered safe investments.
Any offering or issue by the state of California is one of the safest investments you can make in its entire history. It's never defaulted.
That's Tom Dressler, spokesman for California's treasurer. Next week, the state plans to sell notes worth about $4 billion, but it's worried there won't be enough buyers.
Typically, that's not a problem. 2008 is a year where obviously nothing is typical except upheaval, chaos, and currently the credit markets are basically frozen.
If it can't raise the money it needs, California might hit up Treasury Secretary Paulson for a $7 billion loan. Economist Jared Bernstein is with the Economic Policy Institute.
With due respect to Hank Paulson, we're talking about $7 billion. You know, he spends that much before his morning cup of coffee. I strongly suspect that they'll get this bridge loan.
But California isn't the only state looking for help. Massachusetts is talking with the feds about a similar loan. And once they find financing, the next challenge for states is paying it off. Remember, these loans are meant to be paid back with future tax revenues, and that income is expected to fall this year. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Late last night, the British government unveiled a financial bailout package of its own. But even that and the coordinated rate cut today couldn't keep the London stock market from tumbling once again. And as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports now from London, Britain's financial sector has also been hit by a bitter Arctic wind.
Iceland's Prime Minister Geir Horder begged his European allies for help, to no avail. So he's now hoping for a bailout from Russia.
We have not received the kind of support that we were requesting from our friends. So in a situation like that, one has to look for new friends.
Iceland rode the credit boom like no other country. Its bloated financial sector was 9 times larger than its GDP. Siggi Lindell, an Icelandic analyst living in London, blames a small, aggressive band of entrepreneurs.
Iceland was too small for them. There was not enough population, there was not enough finance, there were not enough opportunities to grow. So they went abroad and they did it by borrowing a lot of money.
They bought scores of major companies. In Britain, they own 10% of the retail market. But now that Viking raid has gone horribly wrong. Credit lines have been cut. The Icelandic currency collapsed. Dozens of British department stores could now be on the block. Thousands of Brits, like Emma Dernfield, are frantically trying to get their money out of online Icelandic banks.
I've put it in there thinking it was safe. I wasn't in there to make a huge amount of money. I haven't gone to stocks and shares. I haven't gone into what I thought was unsafe. I feel betrayed. I feel frustrated.
Meanwhile, back in Iceland, the mood is said to be somber. The government says a drop in living standards is inevitable as the country falls back on its traditional industry, fishing. The Viking raiders are in disgrace. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
As Steve Henn was telling us, it was a deeply, deeply indecisive day on Wall Street. Today we'll have the details when we do the numbers. With an economic slowdown comes a slowdown in consumer spending. Sometimes the spending slows first, actually. But whichever way the timing works out, retailers are often the first to really feel the pain. September sales came in today, and some of the big chains got clobbered. Same-store sales were down virtually everywhere but at Walmart, and even there, they weren't up all that much. JCPenney was down 12%, Nordstrom off 10%, and it wasn't for lack of trying to make a sale either. They've been marking down merchandise like there's no tomorrow. But as Jamie Bedrin reports, shoppers may finally have found some deals they can refuse.
Need boots? Buy a pair at Ann Taylor and get the second pair for half off. Skinny jeans? Gap is marking down its denim by as much as 40%. New living room lamps? They're on sale, too, at Restoration Hardware. And if you spend $400 in the store, you'll get $100 back. With the economy on the rails, many retailers are cutting prices like it's the day after Christmas. Jeff Trester is co-founder of PriceScan.com, which tracks consumer prices. He says stores are turning to extreme markdowns to reach consumers before things get worse.
They're already behind the eight ball. They're looking to get all the sales they can. As economic conditions deteriorate, they know unemployment is rising. They know people are losing their jobs. I think to some extent they're trying to get ahead of the curve.
But it won't be easy. Some stores are still trying to unload summer leftovers. Fall merchandise is barely moving. And holiday inventory is on the way. Trester says retailers are in a bind.
No one wants to sell at a loss, but given a choice between selling at a loss now or at a complete loss when items become obsolete and the holiday season ends and so forth, a lot of retailers will choose to blow out inventory.
Analysts say half the battle is just to get shoppers into stores. The number of customer visits to stores dropped more than 9% last month. That's according to ShopperTrack, which measures traffic at 50,000 retail outlets. Kimberly Greenberger follows retail stocks for Citigroup. She says the malls haven't been this quiet since the days following 9/11.
There were worries at the time that there could be bombs set off in shopping malls, and there was certainly a shock across the country in the aftermath of the World Trade Center bombings.
It's difficult to predict just what it will take to get customers to part with their money. Shoppers have become so accustomed to discounts that they're almost immune to markdowns. But says New York University marketing professor Russ Weiner, there may be a tipping point.
I haven't seen any research that points to a magic number, but consumers are very sensitive to numbers in the 30 to 40% range for sure.
Trina Williams is a New York City postal worker. I caught up with her in Midtown Manhattan. She was indulging in a little retail therapy. She said she did get some deals, but not everything was the bargain it appeared to be.
I was looking for a hoodie and it had some 50% off, but it's like overpriced anyway. So to take the 50% off is like that's the price you should be paying from the beginning. So it wasn't really a sale.
Williams says that won't stop her from hitting the stores again and again before the holidays. That could be good news for retailers, and all those discounts could help shoppers through a tough time. In New York, I'm Jamie Bedrin for Marketplace.
Credit markets are still trying to figure out exactly what to make of today's rate cut by the Federal Reserve. But in all fairness, credit analysts and everybody else out there have a whole basket full of things they need to digest, so maybe it's not surprising there's no clear verdict yet. Commentator Robert Reich does have an inkling, though, of how it all might work out.
Global markets have so far given thumbs down to the giant $700 billion bailout plan. The easy answer to why the bailout hasn't worked is it hasn't been implemented yet. But its purpose was largely psychological, to boost confidence that the government is doing something big to clear out bad debts that have been clogging the system. That psychological boost should have happened as soon as the bailout was enacted. Yet no one seems to believe that $700 billion will make much difference. And today's interest rate cut, coordinated with the European Central Bank and Bank of England, may not either. This isn't a liquidity crisis. It's a crisis of trust. Lenders don't trust that borrowers will be able to repay because they don't think that borrowers will be able to collect on what's owed them. Every major player is moving to safer ground, holding money, hoarding it, putting it under a giant global mattress. Bad mortgage loans from the era of anything-goes credit standards started it. But now that America is tipping into deeper recession and unemployment is mounting, more bad loans are cropping up because more people can't pay their bills. And as consumers pull in their belts, more businesses can't pay their bills, which means more layoffs and more bad loans and a global sell-off. The Fed and other central banks can pour endless money into the system, but the problem is no longer just on the supply side. It's now also on the demand side, which means the federal government, as spender of last resort, has to jumpstart the economy, as do other governments. Now's the time to start rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure, roads, bridges, levees, public transit, and help cash-starved state and local governments invest in their schools. Easy to say, but with no one in charge, a lame duck president with the lowest approval rating in history, and a Treasury secretary seemingly incapable of explaining exactly what he's doing, not to mention an election just weeks away, we have everything to fear from fear itself.
Robert Reich is a professor of public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. His most recent book is called Supercapitalism. Your thoughts about what you hear on the program are always welcome. Go to marketplace.org. Click on that link that says contact. Coming up, funding green tech in a down economy.
Certainly, it's hard to see a president coming in and saying, you know, I think what's wrong with the country is that your energy is not expensive enough. Here, let me raise that for you.
But first, let's do the numbers. Rate cut? Yes, so what? The Dow Industrials dropped another 189 points today, 2% to finish at 92.58. The NASDAQ whittled away 14 points, 0.8% to end at 1740. The S&P 500 lost 11 points, 1.1%, closed at 984. Gold shot up above $900 an ounce today as investors headed for cover. Harmony Gold Mining soared 35%. Gold Corporation buffed up 20%. JCPenney disrobed 4.5%. The company said third quarter profits going to fall more than previously forecast. Saks unzipped 13%. The luxury chain says it'll likely sell less in the second half of the year than it forecast. The government's announcement that it's going to issue $40 billion in new bonds pushed the 10-year T-note sharply lower. The yield rose to 3.63%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals, institutions, and advisors reach their long-term financial goals. 888-VANGUARD. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship. Online at kauffman.org. Want more from Marketplace's special coverage on the fallout from America's financial crisis? It's all on our website. You'll find special podcasts, staff blogs, and an interactive map of our road trip across the country. Go to marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at the events for Thursday. The Center for Economic and Policy Research holds a discussion on the IMF's role in global financial stability. Defense ministers from NATO kick off a two-day meeting to address numerous issues, including the development of the Afghan National Army. And exactly 1 year ago, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed at an all-time high, 14,164. I'm Millie Jefferson.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson gave a press conference today. He was talking about how the department's going to put the $700 billion bailout plan into action. The first couple of steps, though, have already been done. The Treasury issued a call for applications from potential asset managers 2 days ago. Those are the folks who are actually going to do the buying and selling of the bad securities that Treasury's going to take out of the market. Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale reports the application deadline is today.
Treasury's request for applications warns that the asset portfolios to be bought and managed will be highly complex and could be worth several hundred billion dollars. Asset managers will have to identify bad loans and securities, negotiate the best possible price for taxpayers, take them over, and run them, conceivably for several years, until market conditions improve and they can be sold. So far, no firms have said they're applying for the jobs, but a Treasury source says there's been lots of interest. That's no surprise to John Douglas, who took over failed savings and loans for the Resolution Trust Corporation 20 years ago.
Given the current environment, I think there will be plenty of people who will be interested.
Douglas says firms with expertise in managing real estate assets will jump at the government jobs if for no other reason they've got nothing else to do right now. Firms said to be interested include BlackRock, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Morgan Stanley. Some on the list are the very firms that bought and sold shaky mortgage-backed assets to begin with. And Douglas says Treasury will have to be on the lookout for two types of conflicts.
One is the firms potentially involved in getting us into this mess. The second would be those firms that are involved in advising potential sellers how to deal with the government. You wouldn't want those firms also advising the government on the buy side.
Treasury Secretary Paulson said today the department is working to resolve conflicts of interest as soon as possible, and the first bad mortgage assets will be purchased within weeks. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Our New York Bureau Chief Amy Scott has been working out of her car for the past week or so. She and our colleague Tess Vigeland have been on matching trips, trying to find out whether Wall Street and the credit crisis have helped set America down the road to ruin. Three of us are going to meet up in St. Louis the day after tomorrow for a special broadcast from there. But in the meanwhile, Amy, it's been a couple of days. Last we knew, you were in Youngstown, Ohio, I think. Where you been since?
Well, from Youngstown, I headed even deeper into car country, into the Detroit area. I started out at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, where I talked to students about how they were feeling about the economy and their futures. And I found that the closer they were to graduation, the more freaked out they were. Sierra Mitchell is a senior psychology major.
Gas prices are high, food is high. It was hard to get a loan, you know, for school, things like that. And my credit card bill, like the interest rates are a lot higher now. Like overnight, it seemed like it just shut up real fast, so.
So it's a pretty scary time to be striking out on your own.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. Listen, there is talk out there about the R word, the recession. One of the reasons we sent you to Michigan, though, was to find out what a state that is arguably already in recession looks like. What are you seeing?
I've seen a lot of for rent signs, vacant buildings, and relics from what used to be a thriving auto and manufacturing industry. I stopped in a place called the Bomber Restaurant in Ypsilanti. It's named for the Ford Willow Run plant down the road that made B-24 bombers during World War II. And I talked to Jim Kovach, who installs security systems for corporations. He says not only is his business slow, he says customers are reluctant to spend money right now, but he says he can really see it on the road.
Probably half to 60% of my day is spent on the freeways. And I can judge by how well people are doing by how many people are on the freeways in the morning trying to get to work. And lately, in the last couple months, it's just been dwindling.
Now, Kai, that may have a lot to do with gas prices, of course, but Kovach believes that with so many layoffs, fewer people are simply on their way to work. And in fact, just after I talked to him, I met a few people who had just lost their jobs. One of them was Steve Granke, who'd been working for a supplier to the big three auto companies.
I'm a product engineer. I recently got separated my company on September 8th, and I had already two other jobs lined up, but both of them failed because they started laying people off.
Granke says he's hoping to get out of the auto business altogether.
Let me change gears on you here for a second, Amy, and ask you about a bailout, but not the big one we've all been talking about. Congress just passed $25 billion in loan guarantees for the auto industry. How's that playing over there, and what are people saying?
Right. These low-interest loans are supposed to help the industry transition to more fuel-efficient vehicles. And supporters say the money could help keep some jobs in Michigan. But, you know, $25 billion, GM lost more than that last year. The Michigan economy has been so battered, I think people are saying it will take more than revitalizing the auto industry to get things back on track.
And you are heading back out on the road this afternoon. Where are you going?
Well, I've made it to Cincinnati already, where I just talked to a car dealer who's looking at closing down his business if things don't improve for him. I've put about 1,200 or so miles on my rental car, and I've got another 350 to go to St. Louis.
And we will see you there on Friday. We'll be doing the broadcast from KWMU in St. Louis. Amy Scott, out there looking for the road to ruin. Thanks, Amy.
No problem. See you there.
Amy and I were talking about those loan guarantees and Detroit moving to more fuel-efficient cars. That's just the latest indicator that the environmental movement has been on what you might call a roll the past couple of years. The debate over climate change and fossil fuels has grown more prominent. There's more private investment in clean energy, and there are more regulations designed to fight global warming. But just how well can green weather an economy drowning in red ink? From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sarah Gardner reports.
Martin Schlageter is a clean air advocate in Southern California, and he's furious at Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Our reaction to the governor's veto is one of disgust and disbelief.
Schwarzenegger vetoed a bill that would have slapped a clean air fee on cargo containers entering California ports. Shipping emissions dirty the air and exacerbate global warming. But in rejecting the fee, the Republican governor argued it was another added cost on business in hard times. Get ready to hear that refrain a lot. Take the debate over regulating greenhouse gases nationwide.
Certainly, it's hard to see a president coming in and saying, you know, I think what's wrong with the country is that your energy is not expensive enough. Here, let me raise that for you.
That's Kenneth Green, a scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. Green is no tree hugger, but even environmentalists have doubts now that Congress can pass a bill capping greenhouse gases next year. Anything that threatens to raise energy prices will turn off consumers as pocketbooks get squeezed. Environmental strategist Ted Nordhaus says the green bubble has burst.
I knew we were in a bubble when my Sports Illustrated showed up one week, and it was the green issue of Sports Illustrated.
Nordhaus believes green consciousness doesn't go much beyond what he calls the liberal elites. He expects the economic downturn to put a lot of green initiatives on the back burner. But Nordhaus says even a recession can't wipe all green religion away, especially the stuff that's saving business money.
Where a Walmart or other companies have sort of made big investments in efficiency, in other practices that are not only sort of good for the planet, but actually allow them to sort of get their costs down, I think that will sustain.
But what about green energy? Analyst Eric Wessoff at Green Tech Media says there's good news and bad. The good news is that along with that $700 billion bailout, Congress also renewed tax credits for industries like wind and solar. The bad news?
Some of the investment banks who were providing financing for many of these very large solar projects, such as, unfortunately, Lehman Brothers, are no longer viable entities.
Trouble is, to commercialize renewable energy, you need economies of scale, and scaling up takes lots of capital. So a credit crunch is the last thing these companies need. Nancy Floyd is founder of a green venture capital firm called Nth Power. She says it can take hundreds of millions of dollars for these companies to start production.
Many of them were counting on being able to access the public markets to be able to, you know, then execute on their business plan and become profitable. Those are the ones that are really going to be in trouble.
Floyd says her firm isn't pulling back, at least right now. She and other clean tech supporters see this downturn as a bump in the road, not a dead end for the green economy. Glenn Hurwitz at Greenpeace insists the alternative energy business is the country's best hope for getting back on its feet. He wishes that $700 billion we're spending on the banking bailout would go to a green stimulus plan instead.
We're giving hundreds of billions of dollars to Wall Street, and so far it doesn't seem like Wall Street even cares.
Hurwitz and other backers of a massive green spending plan say the Wall Street bailout is, quote, shoveling good money after bad. Shoveling good money after green, they insist, would create millions of badly needed jobs. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the American Public Transportation Association, helping America go green. You can calculate your carbon savings at publictransportation.org. And by Putnam Investments, managing a wide range of tax-exempt portfolios. Details at putnam.com. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
This final note today, actually a couple of credit crisis odds and ends we couldn't fit in earlier in the broadcast. It's going to be another couple of days before Citigroup and Wells Fargo face off in court over Wachovia. Today, a New York State judge delayed a hearing until next Tuesday. There's AIG news late this afternoon. The Fed agreed to lend the troubled insurance company another $38 billion. That's on top of the $85 billion it got last month. And Christopher Cox, the chairman of the SEC, said today he wants Congress to do something about the $55 trillion market in credit default swaps, like provide regulation and oversight. Remember, those are the Byzantine insurance deals that companies arrange amongst themselves in case of credit losses. They help bring down AIG in point of fact. And that brings me to the Marketplace desk of shameless hucksterism. Our very own Patty Hirsch has another video explainer on our homepage, more than you ever thought you'd need to know about credit default swaps. Check it out. It's pretty good. Marketplace.org. And that is Marketplace, the radio program, not the website or the video. From American Public Media, today the Dow fell 189 points, 2%. The NASDAQ lost 14 points, 0.8%. The S&P 500 slipped down 11 points. That is 1.1% there. Ravi Karman, Stephen Colon, Eric Johnson, Jeff Peters, Aaron Scott, and Phil Stearns engineer the program for us. Our coverage of the financial fallout from the credit crisis continues tomorrow on the Marketplace Morning Report. And on Marketplace, what are all these stories we hear and read about a new Great Depression?
It makes me somewhat angry at journalists, frankly, because, you know, they're in the business of selling newspapers, and Armageddon, I suppose, sells a lot of newspapers.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
all over the country.
We need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.